It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for the next hour here. We're going to do some children's programs today. Some would say the second program is children's program because it involves flying saucers. But, you know, depends on what you think about science fiction. We're going to start off definitely with a children's program. It's two episodes of Superman. And I think that's the first two episodes. Baby from Krypton and Clark Kent Reporter. This is from 1940.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality. Faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious to bullets.
Up in the sky, look, it's a bird,
it's a plane,
it's Superman. And now, Superman. A being no larger than an ordinary man, but possessed of powers and abilities never before realized on Earth. Able to leap into the air an eighth of a mile at a single bound, hurdle a 20-story building with ease, race a high-powered bullet to its target, lift tremendous weights and rend solid steel in his bare hands as though it were paper. Superman, a strange visitor from a distant planet, champion of the oppressed, physical marvel extraordinary, who has sworn to devote his existence on Earth to helping those in need. As our story begins, we ask you to come with us on a far journey, a journey that takes us millions of miles from the Earth, where the planet Krypton burns like a green star in the endless heavens. Here, civilization is far advanced. It has brought forth a race of supermen, men and women like ourselves, but advanced to the absolute peak of human perfection. As we near Krypton, we see high walls and gleaming turrets. We approach the magnificent Temple of Wisdom. And there in a great hall, Jor-El, Krypton's foremost man of science, is about to address a meeting of the planet's governing council.
Attention! Attention, gentlemen! Jor-El speaks.
Members of the council, I have completed my solar calculations. And much as I dread uttering these words, I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! Gentlemen, hear him out.
These internal quakes we've been experiencing, these volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, gas escaping from giant craters, all point to only one thing, gentlemen. Krypton is utterly and finally, doomed.
Why, the man's mad. He's absolutely...
One moment, gentlemen. One moment. There is no cause for anxiety. I am certain Jor-El has made a mistake. True, we have had a few minor quakes and eruptions, but nothing very serious. There must be some error in your calculations, Jor-El.
No, no, there is no error, Rosan. I only wish there were. The sun is gradually drawing Krypton closer to it. Within a month, possibly only a week, the gravitational pull will be so tremendous that Krypton will not be able to weather the strain. And then our planet will explode like a giant bubble, destroying every living thing on it.
Gentlemen, assuming for the moment, Jor-El, that what you say is true, how are we to avoid it? What can we do to stop it?
There is only one way. As you all know, I have been working on a spaceship designed for interplanetary travel. With time and united effort, we might transport the entire population of Krypton to another world.
Impossible. Where would we go?
To the Earth. My studies tell me the atmosphere of the Earth is very nearly the same as our own.
You have been working too hard, Jor-El. You need a rest. Believe me, we have the utmost respect for your knowledge and integrity. But this is carrying it too far. Planets as large as Krypton do not explode, Jor-El.
Wait! Do you hear that, gentlemen? It's the forewarning of doom. Every moment is precious now. Quakes like that are sounding the death knell of Krypton. It will happen, gentlemen, and happen soon. When the last great eruption comes...
When it comes, Jor-El, it shall find all of us ready. If Krypton is to die, we shall die with it. The parting would be much too severe.
Yes. Very well. Laugh if you like, Roseanne, and you members of the council. I have no time to laugh. My wife, Lara, and my infant son are dear to me. It is not my wish to stand by and see them destroyed. Laugh, all of you. But a time will come, and that time is perhaps very close at hand, when you will wish you had heeded the words of Jor-El. Now you think me a fool, but remember what I have said, gentlemen, when Krypton is shattered into 1,000,000,000 stars, when the glorious civilization we have built is no more, when you and your families are swept from the face of Krypton like dust!
Order, gentlemen! Order! You have heard Jor-El speak. Is it your wish that we devote time and money to the building of spaceships for the transportation of Krypton's population to another planet?
No!
I'm sorry, Jor-El. The Council has spoken.
Yes, and signed the death warrants of every living thing on Krypton. Well, I've done my best to convince you. Now all that remains for me is to proceed with my own means of salvation. My own spaceship to save the lives of those near and dear to me. As for the rest of you, may the gods have mercy on your souls.
Jor-El is mad. He is absolutely mad.
Lara, I didn't see you.
I came out to take the air on the terrace. It's been terribly hot all day. Is that because we're being drawn to the sun, Jor-El?
Yes.
What did the council have to say about that?
I didn't mention it.
Is the model of your spaceship almost finished?
Yes, I just drove the last rivet. How does it look?
Splendid. But will it work?
That remains to be seen. If it does work, I shall immediately begin construction of another just like it, only much larger. One big enough to carry all three of us to another world.
Jor-El, when will that be? Every moment that we spend waiting and wondering...
Yes, I know, Lara. It's been hard on all of us, and particularly hard on you. How is the boy?
Sleeping, Jor-El. That quake this afternoon frightened him. But he's all right now. Can't you come in and look at him? You scarcely see him these days, what with working all hours on the spaceship model.
It can't be helped, dear. I'm racing against time. Right now, I'm anxious to know whether the model will behave as I hope.
How does it operate?
Very simply. When all is ready, I throw this switch. That closes the circuit, and electric energy builds up pressure in the atomic generators. Then, at the final moment, the pressure forces the ship from its carrier and speeds it on its way.
But where does it go?
Wherever it's pointed. This one I'm directing to the planet Earth.
Earth? What is that, Jor-El?
A planet smaller than our own, situated on the other side of the sun. It's inhabited by a race of people similar to ourselves.
Like ourselves?
Well, only partly, of course, my dear. They're about the same size, but nowhere nearly as developed. Very weak and helpless, and with all their faculties extremely limited.
How do you mean?
It's something like this. You know how far you step when you want to go somewhere?
Practically as far as I want. Why, one step takes me to Bratta's house near the fountain.
Exactly. Well, down where I'm sending this spaceship, it's quite different. An Earthman steps only 3 feet at a time at most, and everything else is in proportion.
And that's where we're going? Oh, how dreadful.
My dear, which would you rather do? Go to Earth and live, or stay on Krypton and die?
I'll do anything you say, Jor-El, anything. It doesn't matter to me whether we live or die as long as we're together. It's only the boy I worry about.
Yes, I know. Oh, Lara, darling, don't worry. He'll be saved.
When are you testing the spaceship model?
In the morning. Just as dawn breaks, I'll send it on its way, watching its flight through a high-powered telescope to see whether it lands safely on Earth.
Is Earth the only planet place we can go to, Jor-El?
We couldn't breathe on any other planet but the Earth. It happens to have an atmosphere similar to Krypton's.
I suppose you know best, Jor-El. Are you coming in? It seems to have gotten oppressively hot.
Yes, it has. I wonder. Lara, do you hear that?
Yes, Jor-El. What is it?
Subterranean explosions. Do you feel the ground trembling?
Yes, I do. Jor-El, do you think?
Lara, I'm afraid it's come. Where is the boy, Kal-El?
What do you mean?
Get him quickly. This is the end.
Jor-El, what can we do?
Nothing. I'm not ready. Oh, what a fool I've been to delay.
It isn't your fault, Jor-El. You did all you could.
If only this model were large enough, we could take a chance.
Jor-El, would it carry one of us safely to Earth?
Oh, I think so, but... Lara, where are you going? Stay here with me.
I'm getting Kal-El. If one of us can be saved, Jor-El, it should be the boy.
No, no, Lara, come back. If one must go, it should be you. Lara, I said come back. Come back.
Here he is, Jor-El, still asleep. Goodbye, Kal-El.
Please, Lara.
No, Jor-El, listen to me. We both stay here. Kal-El goes in the spaceship. If there is a chance, Jor-El, one little chance I wanted for my son.
Maybe you're right, Lara.
Jor-El, look. The sky. It's fiery red. The mountains. Look, the mountains are falling in. Jor-El, what's happening?
The end of Krypton, Lara. Just as I foretold. This is the last great quake.
Jor-El, listen. Explosions.
Here, quick, give me the boy.
Kal-El. What are you doing, Jor-El?
Opening the door. Putting him inside.
Jor-El, the house, it's swaying. It's breaking apart. Look, Jor-El.
There. There, he's safe inside. Now for the switch. Stand back, Lara.
Oh, Jor-El, will he reach the earth?
Only the gods know. But there's a chance. The only chance. Stand back now, Lara. I'm going to throw the switch.
Jor-El, it's getting dark. I can't see. What happened?
Fire. Smoke from the center of the planet. Not much time now.
Hold me, Jor-El. Has the spaceship gone?
No, not yet. Waiting for pressure. We may have been too late. If it doesn't work up soon... Wait! Lara! It's off! It's on its way!
Jor-El, where are you?
Here, beside you, Lara. Listen, can you hear me? Our boy, Kal-El. Our son, Lara. He's on his way. On his way to Earth.
Kal-El! Kal-El!
So the tiny rocket ship roars into the uncharted heavens as the mighty planet of Krypton explodes into millions of glowing fragments, glittering stars to remain forever in the night sky. Jor-El and Lara, devoted parents of the tiny boy, perish in the giant quake that destroys Krypton. But what of the rocket ship? Does it reach the Earth? Does it find its mark in all the far-flung darkness of space? Remember, don't miss the next installment of Superman.
Up in the sky, look, it's a giant bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine, presenting Superman.
Up in the sky, look, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
And now, Superman, eighth wonder of the modern world, visitor from a distant planet whose strength knows no limits, whose endurance is beyond anything humanity has ever known. We have seen how the child of Jor-El and Lara was placed in the rocket ship and sent on his way to Earth. During the long journey of the rocket ship to the Earth, the child has become a man. The rocket landed in a desert. Superman stepped forth full grown to explore this strange new world in which he found himself. Today, as our story continues, we find him hovering with his curious power above a quiet highway in Indiana. A trolley car is just pulling up the hill, and as Superman wheels and turns in curious flight, unseen below, a man and a boy come out of the shed that serves as waiting room.
Morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Going into town?
Yes, that's right, John. Taking Jimmy to the fair.
That is a great show, all right. Well, I reckon you're my only passengers. Make yourselves at home. I'm going to get me a drink of water.
All right.
Why, Dad, we've got the trolley all to ourselves.
Yeah, regular private car.
Where'd the motorman go?
And just over to the spring for a drink. It's a mighty hot day.
You'd better hurry or we'll be late.
We can't start without the motorman.
But we are starting. Look, Dad, the doors have closed. We're moving.
Yes, what happened?
Dad, I want to get out.
The brakes. Something happened to the brakes.
Let's get out, quick. Open the doors.
They're jammed. They're tight shut.
Dad, we're going faster and faster. We're going downhill. Dad, what are we going to do?
Jimmy, come here.
The window. Out the window, Dad. Get it open. Smash it.
Oh, wait.
Jump, Dad. Jump.
No. It's too late. Going too fast.
We've got to, Dad. Look, there ahead. There's a tree.
Jimmy.
A tree. A tree's falling right in the tracks.
Look. There in the sky.
It's a man.
Why, he's flying.
It can't be. It's not possible.
Dad, he's coming straight at us. He's moving now. He's going on the roof. Dad!
Quick! Grab hold of me.
No, put me down. Let me go.
Stop it.
One under each arm. Out through the top. Hold on. We're going to crash. Well, we just got out of that in time. The trolley car's a wreck. Smashed into a million pieces.
Where are you going? What are you doing to us?
What's happening? Put us down.
Don't be frightened. You're all right. I had to get you out of there in a hurry. Pulling off that roof was the only way. Now we're going down again. Down. Down. There you are. Safe and sound in the field.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Quite all right, Professor. Getting you and the boy out of that car was nothing.
I can't believe it.
Who are you, anyway? Where do you come from?
I have no name. I come from a world that no longer exists. Here in this world of yours, men would call me a Superman.
It's a dream. A wild, impossible dream.
But, Dad, it happened. We saw it. He flew down, took us under his arms.
And out of the car, that's all. Nothing so strange about that.
And you saved our lives, Jimmy's and mine. I don't understand even now, but I'm grateful.
Are you, Professor?
Well, do you doubt it?
Would you do something to prove it?
Would we? Anything at all.
Then make me a promise. Promise that you'll say nothing at all about what's happened.
What? Don't you want people to know?
Not just yet. I want no one to know. Except those I help. Will you promise?
If you wish.
I do. Believe me.
Then you have our word. Is that all?
No. You've given me your promise. Now I want your advice.
You want advice from us?
You know this world. I'm a stranger. You know the people in it. But I have still to find them out.
You want to meet men, is that it?
Not meet them, Professor. Observe them. Study them. See them at their best and their worst. Know which to help and when help is needed. If you can tell me that...
Dad, can we help him?
Well, I think so, Jimmy, if that's what he wants.
It would mean a great deal to me.
Well, my friend, if we can call you that...
I hope we can.
My first friends on this earth.
To mingle with people, to see men at the highest and the lowest, if that's what you want... Now, let me think. How about a newspaper, a great metropolitan daily?
A newspaper?
Well, yes, join their staff. Be a reporter.
Oh, but you can't do it in those clothes. Not that blue costume with the cloak and shield on your breast. Gee, you couldn't.
Now, Jimmy, these are the cloak and the shield of Superman. If I become as other men, I shall dress as other men.
Well, you'll have to assume some kind of a name. What do they call you?
I have no name.
Well, how about... Clark Kent. That sounds all right.
Yes, why not? It's usual enough. Won't attract attention.
Clark Kent. Clark Kent. Yes. And about joining a newspaper. That should give me an opportunity to learn the troubles of men, to know whom to help, and when help is needed. I'll do it. Many thanks to both of you for your advice.
Well, no thanks are necessary. If there were only something more...
Just this. Remember your promise. Never to reveal my identity. And now, goodbye. I've stayed too long, and I'm off. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
They're right. Superman must become a reporter. A reporter by the name of Clark Kent. Clark Kent. I'll do it.
City roll.
White.
Listen, Chief. You better get somebody in that railroad story right away.
Anything break?
Looks bad. I don't know where your dope came from, but it sure was right.
Well, where are you now?
At the yards out of town. If I were you, I'd have somebody watch the man they call the Wolf.
The Wolf?
That's what I do, Chief. Watch him. Trail him. Follow him every minute. He's at the bottom of this as sure as you're born. Now, hey, I gotta meet him. Someone's coming. So long.
Excuse me, Mr. White. That young man's still waiting.
What young man? Oh, the one who wants a job? Well, let him wait. Who have we got that's free?
McCann's on the coast. Grayson's down in Virginia. Most of the day men are full up.
I knew it. Confound, it's always the way. Something breaks and nobody to handle it.
What is it, Mr. White?
Railroads. Sabotage. I didn't believe it, but there may be something in it after all. If there is...
Yes, sir?
If there is, Miss Smith, it'll be the biggest story since Lindbergh. And me short-handed. Oh, what's the use?
Yes, sir. About that man.
Oh, send him in. Send him in.
Yes, sir. Come in, Mr. Kent. Mr. White will see you now.
Thanks.
You want to see me? Close that door.
Yes, sir. My name is Kent. Clark Kent.
What can I do for you, Mr. Kent?
Well, Mr. White, you can give me work, I hope.
Work? On the paper?
Yes, sir. I'd like to be a reporter.
No, you'd like to be a reporter. What papers have you worked on?
Well, none, sir, but
no, you haven't. But you think you'd be a whiz. Well, I'm afraid I can't use you, Kent.
You mean you haven't any openings?
Not for greenhorns. I'm sorry if I'm blunt.
But, Mr. White, even if I am a greenhorn, suppose I brought you a good story.
And where would you get it? I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me, Mr. Kent.
A really good story?
Such as?
Such as the complete inside on the man called the Wolf on the Western Railroads?
What's that?
You heard me. Do you want that story?
Do I want it? Well, I should say I do. But look here.
I think I could get it for you, Mr. White.
What do you know about the Wolf?
A little bit.
Where did you ever hear his name?
In connection with railroads, Mr. White.
Oh, stop beating around the bush. I only heard the beginning of that myself yesterday morning. Not a paper in the country's carried a line, and yet...
And yet I come in here and talk about it. I think I could do something with it, Mr. White.
Now, look here, Kent. Mysterious secret messages have threatened to tie up every railroad in the country, beginning with the Western. For a while, the road paid no attention, and then the crack flyer on the P&R went off a bridge.
Yes, I read about that.
Naturally. But you didn't read about the warnings because they weren't printed.
Weren't printed?
No, and they won't be. Not until we've checked all the angles. And then this man, the Wolf...
Oh, yes, the Wolf.
Now, where do you come in? How did you get to know the Wolf? Excuse me. Say your own, White.
My friend, tomorrow night, the Silver Clipper leaves Denver for the West. It will not arrive in Salt Lake City.
Hey, what's that? Who's this?
I have been called the Wolf. Goodbye.
Hey, come back here. Come back here. Wait.
Yes, Mr. White?
Where did that call come from?
I'm sorry, sir. The party's been disconnected.
Ah, nuts.
I beg your pardon, sir, but if that call did come from the Wolf, I should be inclined to believe it.
Huh? How do you know who that was?
If I were you, I'd warn the officials in charge of the Silver Clipper.
Look here. You couldn't hear that phone. What is this? How do you know who called me?
As I was saying, Mr. White, suppose I brought you a good story. The story of the Silver Clipper and the Wolf.
I take chances, Kent. I'm going to take a chance on you.
Thank you, Mr. White.
It's 2,000 miles. You'll have to hop a plane.
I'll get there, Mr. White, in spite of the weather.
Lord, I hadn't noticed the weather. Well, get to the airport anyway.
You rang, Mr. White?
Miss Smith, this is Clark Kent, temporarily attached to our staff. You'll note I said temporarily.
Yes, sir.
Kent leaves for the West by the first plane. Get him tickets and a $200 advance.
Mr. White, all planes are grounded.
Well, that's all right, sir. I'll get there.
Take him outside. Show him what he needs to know.
Mr. White, I'd like to thank you.
Oh, let it go, Kent. Let it go. You get a story and you get a job. You're either clairvoyant or the luckiest guesser alive. Either way, I can use you. But if you miss out, well...
This way, Mr. Kent.
Thank you, Miss Smith. Nice of you to show me around.
Pretty lucky, I'll say. 100 good newspaper men walking the streets and you step right into a job.
I say, I am lucky.
You wait in here. It's the ante room of the cashier's office.
Well, I really don't need an advance.
Oh, playboy in disguise, eh? Wait here.
Oh, what a rotten night.
Don't fall out that window. It's 20 stories down.
Beautiful view, even in the fog.
You wait right here till I get your money. Then I'll introduce you to a few real newspaper men.
Planes grounded. 2,000 miles to go. Sorry, Miss Smith. I'm afraid I can't wait. Clark Kent may need a plane, but Superman doesn't. Up with the window. And out.
Kent, I hope I didn't keep you waiting to...
What? Miss Smith.
What is it?
Miss Smith.
Oh, what's wrong?
That man. Did he go out, that Clark Kent?
Nobody went through the city room.
No. He didn't go out. Well, I left him right here. The window. Oh, the open window. He went through it and it's 20 stories down.
He went out the window.
Out the open window, 20 stories above the ground. In the wink of an eye, Clark Kent, cub reporter for the Daily Planet, becomes Superman, eagle of the sky, winging his way west over city and plain, river and mountain, through the storm-swept night. But will he be in time? Can he checkmate the strange figure called the Wolf, discover the plot, save the Silver Clipper, roaring toward Denver at 90 miles an hour? And remember, don't miss the next installment of Superman.
Up in the sky. Look. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Now we know how Clark Kent came about and how Superman got here on Earth, just in case you hadn't heard the original origin story. Well, it's now time to hear about flying saucers. We're going back to 1950 for this one. This is an episode of 2000 Plus.
I was alone in a room 100,000 miles from Earth. My body lay dead before me, and yet I spoke and felt and lived. Behind me lay a tortured world. Before me, the moon and destiny. Again, I felt a surge of power, and had I been able to, I would have smiled. My mission was accomplished. No one knew, no one understood. If they had, they would not believe. This was a project 3,000 years old, yet no one had guessed. No one.
Listen now to 2,000 Plus. Adventures into the world of tomorrow. Science fiction stories from the years beyond 2000 A.D. Today, a story entitled The Flying Saucers. It is the year 2000 plus 12. A blazing New Mexico sun shines down upon a great military installation, upon a vast, noisy field, and upon a silvery shape which seems to strain forward, ready to leap up into space. In an executive office, a man sits in his chair, his eyes on the great rocket. Behind him, a girl waits for him to speak.
Better close that window, Eileen. The noise won't let a man think.
Yes, sir.
Ah, that's better.
I'm ready, Dr. Bronson.
Get this on tape as well as in shorthand. It's for the permanent files in Washington. It's got to go out in the next jet. I'll give you a signed sheet of stationery. Send it off to make the 5 o'clock connection. You got that?
Yes, sir. Recorder on. The letter to be transcribed over your signature and sent off on the 5 o'clock connecting plane.
Right. Heading, top secret. 2, National Scientific Council. Copies to Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretary of Defense, the President. From Andrew Bronson. Forget the usual string of titles, Eileen. Chief Department of Extraterrestrial Research, White Sands, New Mexico. Regarding defense measures against aerial visitors listed in file AA-286 as flying saucers. 1. For the past 3 months, this secret experimental installation has been visited by flying saucers. First appearance coincided with the launching of our secret flying missile, Zeus. Details in reports CB-286, A, B, and C. 2. Although the flying saucers have never landed, the frequency of their visits has tripled since the launching. As reported in the file cited, Zeus has not yet returned. 3. In view of the importance to national security of this secret installation and its experiments, the reports already mentioned were reviewed by JCS and the National Scientific Council. It was decided that the flying saucers were a potential menace and that countermeasures be undertaken. 4. Zeus 2, an improved model of our secret flying missile, has been completed and armed. It is equipped with mass attraction and proximity fuse devices. Warhead contains 5,000 pounds hexenite. Firing control automatic. See file CB-344. 5. The station has been placed in condition alert. Next visit from the flying saucers is expected momentarily. In view of the foregoing, we are in complete readiness. We will attack. Repeat. We will attack. Now, where's my pen?
Andrew.
Ah, This one doesn't work.
Oh, I'll get it. I saw your pen in your vest.
Don't touch that vest. I'll get it myself.
Did I do something wrong?
No. There, well, you might have been hurt.
Hurt?
No, never mind. There you are, my signature. Now, on your way.
Andrew, why can't I stay?
You know the orders, Eileen. We're going to test Zeus, too. You know anything can happen. Maybe the flying saucers will come back. If they do, we'll be ready for them. Besides, if the rudder should go wrong or the hexanite detonate... No. On your way now. The jet car's waiting downstairs.
Oh. Very well. But you will be careful, won't you?
Of course. Eileen.
Yes?
I've never told you...
Yes?
Never mind. Au revoir, my dear. Au revoir, my darling. Dr. Bronson to security. Come in, security.
Security, aye.
Has Miss Harkness phoned in yet?
No, sir.
Well, that's funny. I expected her to after sending off the latest reports. She should be home now. Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
Well, something must have happened to her. Send a security officer to check. What about the setup for the new test?
All ready, sir.
Oh, that's good. I hope nothing happens. Any report of flying saucers?
No, sir, not yet. But, sir, there's something funny about that. Every time we get ready for a test, even one of the minor missiles... One of the saucers appears. That's too much of a coincidence for comfort, sir.
Yes, I thought of that, too. You think there's a leak somewhere?
Yes, we've checked and rechecked. Nothing. But there's no doubt that someone's passing out information.
I see.
Of course, we'll keep on checking. Whoever is responsible...
Dr. Bronson.
Radar control to Dr. Bronson.
Bronson here. What is it?
Flying saucer detected and registered. Computation center fed data. Data follows. Distance, 486 miles. Height, 50.2 miles. Speed, 5 miles per second. Estimated time of arrival at contact point, 1 minute, 58 seconds from now.
One over. 58, right. Alert fire control.
Fire control alerted, sir. When may we expect you?
In 30 seconds, over and off. Are you still on security?
Aye, sir.
Clear the field.
Field already cleared. I've just sent emergency red signal. We're waiting in control, sir.
Very well. I'm coming down right now. Over and off. Let me have my headset and hand mic, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Bronson, to fire control.
Fire control to Bronson. Everything ready here, Chief. Dolly's cleared from Zeus 2. Warhead armed.
Well done. Bronson, to computation.
Computation.
Your figures checked through cybernetics?
Yes, sir. As reported, Zeus 2 should destroy flying saucers 6 seconds after blastoff. Firing time, 2,200, 33 hours, 36 seconds.
Time check, everyone. Time is now 32 seconds to blastoff. Condition red. I shall operate fire control remote. Strap in for firing. Security.
Security, aye.
Report.
Field cleared, guards alerted and shielded, anti-radiation up, warhead armed, Zeus 2 ready. Any further?
10 seconds.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire! Get a bearing on that trajectory computation.
Trajectory established and being fed EMAC. Trajectory correct, sir. Parabolic sound reflectors receiving. Contact 2233-42, right on the
nose. Good work, everyone. Security.
Security, aye.
Condition green. Well, boys. Now to wait till someone phones in where the pieces fell. And then maybe we'll be finally knowing what the flying saucers are. Yes, Scotty. Has security located Eileen Harkness?
No, sir, not yet. Cap McDonald is here, sir. He has a man with him, says you should see him immediately.
Well, all right, bring him in. Yes. What is it?
McDonald thought you'd like to hear this, sir. This is Al Waters, a rancher from upstate. He flew down from his ranch this morning and reported to the state police. They sent him to us.
The saucer?
Yes, sir.
Where is it, Mr. Waters, the wreck?
Wreck? I didn't see no wreck, Doc.
What did you see?
I seen a flying saucer come down about half a mile from my ranch house. Saw it this morning when I was going after a lost calf.
He swears the saucer's undamaged, Dr. Bronson.
Huh. Well, it may not be the one we... You flew down, Mr. Waters?
Yep, got my own jet plane.
Well, can you take me up with you to your ranch, I mean?
Sure can. Glad to.
All right, we'll leave immediately. Scotty, you round up the crew, everyone. Have them load everything we need on the transport, the big job. When can I expect you?
Give us 2 hours, sir.
All right. Now, Mr. Waters, let's get to your ranch.
There's the flying saucer, Doc.
Where?
You see them two peaks? That plateau between them, you see it? There, now the sun's hit it.
It is undamaged.
I'm putting her down.
Did you see any signs of life, anything moving?
No, sir. Of course, I didn't get too close. I was might leery the thing.
I understand. It's just as well you didn't.
Hey, wait till she stops rolling, Doc. Sure are excited, ain't you?
I'm afraid so. Even scientists get excited sometimes.
Sure is big, ain't she?
Yes, must be over 300 feet in diameter. Now, there's an airlock.
Hey, you ain't going in.
Was that round door open when you first saw this?
I don't know. I don't remember. If you're going in, Doc, I'm going with you.
Well, thank you.
It'll be safer. There's two of us. Ain't got a gun?
No.
I'm glad I got mine, then. Never can tell what you'll bump into. Don't you think you ought to wait for the rest of your gang?
I can't. I've got to see what's in there.
Okay.
Watch your head.
Right.
Inner door is still closed. Let's hope it'll open. It will.
Look at that. Sure looks complicated, don't it?
This must be the control room. I can't wait to inspect
it. Ain't that another door over there?
Yes. You'd better stay here. Don't touch anything. I'll see if there's anyone still aboard.
Okay, Doc. Keep your eyes open.
Larger room. This must be the crew's quarters. There's no one here. Let's... What's that? I felt giddy for a second. Well, I'll take a look through. Irene. Irene, wake up. Wake up. Unconscious. Irene. Still unconscious. How did she get here? I've got to get a doctor. Waters, what are you doing at that control board?
If you look through the porthole, Dr. Bronson, you'll notice that we're miles up, still accelerating. We would have been higher if I hadn't to take such care with my takeoff.
Waters, are you crazy? Who are you? Where are you taking me? Us.
You were right when you guessed that this is not the saucer you destroyed. It isn't. You were wrong when you said there was no crew on board. There is. You see, I am the crew. You should consider yourself very fortunate, Dr. Bronson. It's not everyone who can view the Earth from a distance of 100,000 miles.
You can put that gun away. Let me take care of Miss Harkness.
I've already assured you there's nothing wrong with her. Merely an advanced soporific. She'll recover quickly. In fact, here she is now.
Andrew,
Eileen, stay where you are. He has a gun.
Where are we? How did I get here?
I think you'd better sit down, Miss Harkness.
Who's he?
I don't know. He calls himself Waters.
Where are we? I looked out of a porthole.
Don't be frightened, Eileen. We're on a flying saucer.
A flying saucer?
Yes. How did you get here?
I don't know. I sent off the report, got into the car, and woke up here.
One of my operatives. I shall now engage the automatic controls, and the ship will fly itself until we get to the moon.
The moon?
Yes, that is our first stop. You see, fast as this saucer is, it would take us centuries to get to our ultimate destination. So we must transfer to a matter converter at our base on the moon, and we shall be in Kor almost instantly.
Kor? What are you talking about?
Perhaps a little explanation is due you. We Kor are the inhabitants of the solar system you know as Rigel.
But that's 500 light years away.
Exactly. Although the speed of what you Earthmen have been pleased to call our flying saucers is approximately that of light, even that speed would entail a round trip of 1,000 years. True, the Kor are almost immortal, but for efficiency's sake, we set up a matter converter to flash us, or rather I should say our operatives, through space, instantaneously. Our base is on the dark side of the moon. From there, we transship to the saucers.
But why? Why are you so interested in Earth? Why haven't you let us know? Sent representatives to the World Council?
One thing at a time, Dr. Bronson. I see you partake of your pulp writer's suspicions that we intend to take over the Earth. The truth is just the opposite. We want Earth left strictly alone for our research.
How can we believe that?
The truth is self-explanatory. We've been visiting the Earth for over 3,000 years.
3,000 years?
Yes, Miss Harkness.
But why? For what reason?
A very simple reason. Our interests differ from yours. Without research, we become bored. To spend eternity in boredom. Well, we are primarily psychologists, social psychologists. While you were engrossed in a mechanical civilization, of course, we fostered that development.
I still don't understand it.
I didn't expect you to. However, in every society, there are certain problems, shall I say, which can only be solved experimentally. We have used you humans in our experiments. It's been extremely interesting.
You mean you've been using us as guinea pigs, as experimental animals?
You may put it that way if you wish.
I still don't see how.
Through our operatives.
That's the third time you've mentioned operatives. What do you mean?
We Kor possess no body, as you know it. We are constructed of energy. In order for us to visit Earth, it was necessary for us to construct human bodies and to inhabit them. We thereupon had an operative who could go to work on Earth.
You couldn't have gotten away with it. Someone must have suspected
you. Exactly. There were a few suspicions. So we took the memory of life on Kor away from our operatives and landed them on Earth, complete with an Earth history. You may remember Alexander the Great. He was one of our operatives. And François Villon, his task was to satirize his time and to lead the unrest which brought on the French Revolution. There we had another, Marat.
Villon, Marat. It's incredible.
Not at all. As one of your Earthmen, Emerson, said, an institution is the lengthened shadow of one man. We saw to it that the key men in each age were ours. Our operatives. The problems they set Earth gave our scientists much material to work with. Enough for another few thousand years.
Then our inventions, our scientific advances were pushed on by you.
Yes, like giving an ape a stick to see what he will do with it.
Then our wars, our revolutions?
Naturally, wars and revolutions are part of the research. They're all part of the master plan. But don't forget, we fostered genius, too.
Why are you telling us all this?
Surely that must be clear even to you. You are perhaps the leading scientist in America, certainly the leading figure in the use of atomic power for extraterrestrial research, a key man. But doesn't that suggest something to you?
No.
I can't believe it.
Certainly, my dear Bronson. You are one of our operatives. You've done your work. But your experiments have endangered our base on the moon. So it's time to transport you back to Kor. Ah, the signal. We are approaching our base. It will be a comfort to leave this unpleasant body and to resume my right... Bronson, put down that hand.
Here, put this handkerchief over your nose, Eileen. The gas will clear away in a moment. I think it's all right now. The full force was directed at this core.
Oh, what was it?
I had a gas pen in my vest, an idea which was originated after some of our scientists were kidnapped by the Eastern Alliance. I never thought I'd have to use it on something like this.
Is he dead?
No. He's merely unconscious for a few minutes. The gas is harmless. See if you can find something to put around his hands and feet while I see if I can operate the controls. We've got to get back to Earth.
All right, Andrew.
They won't believe our story, but they'll have to believe the ship.
I can't find anything to use.
You'd better hurry.
All right. Andrew.
What is it? We haven't much time.
I thought you said the gas was harmless.
Of course it is.
But this man isn't unconscious. He's dead.
Dead?
There's no pulse, no breathing, no heartbeat. Oh, Andrew.
Now get hold of yourself. I don't know how to... If it was his life or ours, Eileen.
I neglected to inform you that a core of the upper grades can leave his body as he pleases. I see that I underestimated you, Dr. Bronson. You saw immediately that my weakest point was the human body of which I complained. Very clever.
I can't move.
I need no futile arms and hands in this form. A core carries power, for a core is power.
I take it you will rid us of our bodies, too.
Precisely.
Isn't there anything... If we promise to forget, you can make us forget.
Unfortunately, the matter is out of my hands. My orders were to recall two operatives.
Two?
Yes. Miss Harkness was a psychometrist in her previous, incarnation? An excellent one, too, Draga, or Eileen, as you're now called.
But this is inhuman.
Precisely. I am not human.
Let Eileen go. I'll go with you gladly, but Eileen...
No, Andrew. Take me instead.
The answer is the same for both of you. No.
What kind of fiends are you? Isn't there one of you with pity? Just one who knows what we feel, who's felt the agony of the millions you've made your guinea pigs?
You're speaking of sympathy? No. Yes, I stand corrected. There was one, of course, who felt that strange emotion. Carter. An odd being, as I recall.
And I suppose you killed him?
No. A core being energy cannot be destroyed. We captured Carter and exiled him to your planet. An enormous task. He was one of our greatest scientists. That makes it all the more strange, you see. He wished to stop our experiment. Well, we lost track of him, but no matter. The unfit must go. That is the paramount law of nature. Enough of these digressions. It is time...
Let me say goodbye.
A little time must elapse before I can build up the energy to free you of your body. You may have the time. Besides, it is a new experience to me. Most interesting.
Eileen, darling, it's too late now, but I want you to know I love you. I've loved you ever since you walked into my office 3 years ago.
And I love you, Andrew. I always have. I always will.
I'm very touching.
Don't be afraid. My darling.
This touching of lip to lip... Very interesting. Energy is undoubtedly transmitted. Very well, Dr. Bronson. It is time.
No, take me first. Let him go. Andrew.
Your emotion is senseless. I'm merely returning the two of you to your true being.
Oh, Andrew. My darling. My darling.
So this is your odd emotion called love? This should make an interesting report. A minor report, it is true, but...
You have done your work, O Loka.
You have done your work too well.
You are not the operative I was sent for?
No. I am Carter, at last. But now, with 2 centuries of power I learned on Earth, there is no corps who can withstand me now. Sympathy is the ability to feel what others feel. How do you feel now, Loka?
I don't understand. Unscientific.
No. Say mercy. Say it.
Mercy. Mercy.
There shall be changes on Kor. We must leave Earth alone to work out its destiny in its own way. Now, go to the converter and await me there. Draga. Myrlene.
Android.
Don't be afraid. The transition is painless. There is so much for us to do on Kor, so much to teach you.
Oh, Android, I can't. I'm so frightened.
Don't be me. Your power will soon be with me. For you too are Kor. What those fools didn't know was that emotion, too, is power. With your love and mine, we can right the wrongs Kor has done to Earth. There is eternity for both of us to spend together. Eileen. Draga.
I'm ready. My darling. Now.
And forever.
Next week on 2000 Plus, another dramatic story of unbelievable adventure. The story of a world of the past locked in the world of tomorrow. Time out of hand. Be sure to listen. 2000 Plus is produced and directed by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's production, Ralph Bell portrayed Dr. Bronson, Louis Van Ruten was Waters, Bryna Rayburn was Eileen, Ken Williams was Scotty. The script was written by Pierre Gerson. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley, music composed by Elliot Jacoby, sound Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner, engineer Martin Enghauser. This is Ken Marvin speaking.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. We'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio. I hope you can join us to listen to it then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.